Hey everybody, Nate Clear here with Nondell Influencers Podcast. If there's anybody that's listening in right now, this is going to be crucial for anybody that has thought about making the transition into the non-delegated channel, but really kind of got to the point of, well, I don't know anything about licensing. I don't know what kind of policies, procedures I need to have. Isn't this going to be additional audit scrutiny? I've got this, that, and the other thing. And then you end up just talking yourself out. If that sounds like you, this is certainly the episode for you. In our previous episode, we had the folks from Rosegate. They were talking about making sure that you've got your I's dotted, T's crossed, you know, moving into to correspondent, adding a warehouse line, scary business. Well, today we actually have Lauren Jerome and Scott Giesel from Strategic Compliance Partners that are here to speak with us and to talk to us a little bit more about what tools and resources are out there so that it's not quite so scary. So Lauren, Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, Nate, thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, excellent. Glad to be here, Nate.
Where are you guys calling in from?
So I am based in Arizona, but I'm actually in a hotel room right now, and I'm in San Diego.
Hey, you tricked us. The curtains look awesome.
Exactly, yes.
Well, I know that, you know, we hear it all the time. I want to be non-Dell. And as I had mentioned, you know, they end up starting to try and put together a business plan, right? They see all this benefit, you know, okay, I get to disclose my own name from a branding aspect. I get to order my own appraisals. So I get a little bit more control there, control over pricing, et cetera. But then as you start to kind of peel the onion, they're asking, okay, where do I go for a QC policy? Do I have the right license? What do you guys see from strategic compliance standpoint for people that are in that space and start to flake out? And what are the conversations that you have with those kind of guys?
Yeah. So number one, the NMLS, it is tough to navigate right through that website, through a government website, but it's a different licensing type. You know, the bonds amounts are different, trust accounts, net worth is different. So making sure that you have those in line before you even get out of the gate is something very important. So you're not going to screw yourself over in the future, right? Once you start that process through the NMLS. I would also say in ties with the QC and AML, if you're coming from owning your own brokerage shop, you should already have those in place. You should already have a QC and an AML policy, but going into the non-Dell, now you're just tweaking it, kind of upgrading it to be that non-Dell lender plan for the quality control plan.
Gotcha. What are you guys seeing? Are you seeing a lot of, I mean, because certainly from a warehouse lending perspective, we're starting to see kind of this migration of retail folks that are moving out independent. Are you seeing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that, you know, for the past couple years, I would say people are just seeing how possible it is. They have the knowledge to do it, right? They've been in this industry for years and they're saying, you know, why not me? Why not own my own shop and do this? And I still see it today. People coming in and doing their own thing.
What do you generally see? I mean, what are their objections or, you know, because I'm sure you guys are much like us, right? We'd love to see new blood into the industry. It's certainly more opportunity from us from a warehouse lending standpoint. But overall, we just see it as a better way for the consumer to experience the independent mortgage originator. When those guys, I guess, are originally coming to you, what are their basic questions? What are they generally looking for?
Yeah, I would say a big one right out of the gate is requirements, right? So that kind of goes back into the NMLS. No one wants to take the time to really navigate that website and go through and, like you said, in your other podcast, you know, cross your T's, dot your I's. But that's something important to do because you're not going to go anywhere unless if you know the requirements that you need. Kind of just like starting out as an LO, you had basic requirements that you had to meet. This is now just kind of a level up of that and more responsibility on your end to make sure that you're doing things correctly and, you know, just checking off all those boxes that are required by you.
What are you finding? I mean, so they get set up with you. You go through that process from licensing, et cetera. Is it a daunting task? I mean, how much time does it take for somebody that is going to, you know, maybe I am a branch and I want to go do it on my own. if they can start with you, I mean, is this something that they need to plan on? Like, okay, I'm not going to be able to originate anything for 3 months, 6 months, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So people do say that, right? It takes months to get approved, but what's taking that long is the state approval. It's not working with a company and getting all of the documents in a row. That can happen in a couple of weeks if you're organized, especially. Right. So as long as you're organized, working with someone who knows the NMLS ins and outs, or if you're comfortable in doing that yourself, making sure you're submitting the correct documentation the first time, because they will come back and ask you to redo it, or they'll just not accept it. So just really focusing in on that, and taking your time through that process, because then once it's submitted to the state, it's really just a waiting game. And people think that if you do work with a company, that can go faster, that can be approved faster. That's not always the case. We can potentially help at the beginning of collecting all that data and information, but it's really just a waiting game once it gets into the state's hands.
So it's just more just trying to make sure that, you know, if they're working with somebody like you guys, you guys are going to help to make sure that it's a one-time submission and not, okay, we waited in this line for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks and only to find out we didn't complete section, you know, F, and now we got to go back in the queue, right?
Exactly, yeah. And with that being said too, I mean, states through the NMLS, they'll have different word tracks. So they may call the same exact document a different name in another state. So, you know, obviously we're in there every day, so we know those ins and outs, but the regular person going in there may not know that. So they may submit the wrong information. Again, it's government talk, right? You're on a government website. So that in its own is just, it's hard to navigate.
Gotcha. So now let's kind of change gears here. We get through the entry level. All right. It's not as daunting of a task. A lot of it's just making sure that you have an expert solution or experts to help you, guide you along in terms of, okay, if you don't have a QCA AML, you're getting started on, we'll button that up for you. We can go over that, understand your process. Second, we'll make sure that, you know, the states that you need to be licensed in, the states that you've historically done business, we can get that done for you and get it submitted timely. So that's a kind of a one touch. Now that I'm moving in, now I'm an established non-delegated correspondent, or, you know, maybe, you know, I started off as broker, get my feet wet, and I'm kind of moving. What do I need to be, guys, considerate of? What are the things that I'm missing, right? The unknowns, in terms of I'm getting started, got my licensing, all that kind of stuff. What's the next step?
Yeah, so it goes back to those policies and trainings that are required by brokers that are the same policy that are required by non-del. It is now just the practice of those policies that are important for non-del. So it's more responsibility on your end. It falls more into their lap on that end. So it's, again, organization, staying on top of things, making sure that you're reviewing, making sure that your policies are updated. Just making trainings as well, that all of your employees are trained correctly. And just having that knowledge, or, you know, having someone to go to ask to say, what do we need to be training on? What is required of us every year as a non-del? And just really, really being responsible for that at the end of the day.
So is that something that strategic compliance can help them with? Like, so, right, I know everything origination. I know loans inside and out. I know processing. I may know how to price a transaction. I know product, et cetera. I'm going out on my own because I know that I have an entrepreneurial spirit. I know that I've got other LOs that want to join me. I'll be, you know, kind of the blunt force instrument to open the door and allow this kind of new channel to exist. I guess where's the nexus for them? I mean, is that something that they need to do on their own, or is that something that strategic compliance can help augment for them? What does that look like?
Yeah, so what that would look like is, number one, SCP can provide all those policies, specifically non-del, right? So that is the policies on top of being not as generic, right? Because they need to be more focused in on the non-del space. And then we will continuously update them. So you never really have to worry about policies changing or expiring. You'll have that in your back pocket. And then being assigned training. So that can actually happen through us as well. Specifically for non-del, federal requirements are a little more so for non-del for trainings that we can assign out to. And then just having a resource like Scott actually would be one of your point of contacts. For instance, something happens and you have no idea how to handle it as a non-Dell, well, you have a consultant now to call or email and say, you know, this is the scenario. What do I do? Never heard of this before. How do I navigate this?
Scott, what do those look like? What are the questions that are generally coming across to you for the people that are running into that situation? Because that seems, right? If I'm doing this and I'm the first one, right? I'm the pioneer. This is the first time it's happening, right? That's scary stuff.
I agree. Nate, you actually alluded to it. You said born salespeople, right? Everyone's naturally an entrepreneur. If they come from a retail branch, they're usually running a branch themselves. They're salespeople first. They have an entrepreneurial spirit. They want to break off and maybe start a broker shop. And then they have their eyes on this idea of the independence and the flexibility and the creativity that comes, even the natural progression of growing a business into a non-Dell correspondent. But with the non-Dell correspondent comes the need for a little bit more of an admin mindset. Maybe some type of management processes need to be put into place. I mean, with non-Dell comes a lot more risk. With it comes a lot more responsibility. It's also, there's more oversight. A broker is normally on a usual 2 to 3 year cycle for oversight by their state auditors. They're pretty easy to get through a broker audit. When you get the non-Dell correspondent, you're really not going to get away with doing it the night before, like, you know, getting together, getting your homework done the night before it's due. That's not going to fly. Yeah. This is all about, Lauren mentioned it, practice of policy. At one time, you might be a little bit spoiled in what I got signed up with a new lender, a new investor, or a new state. They asked for a copy of my AIR policy or my AML policy. I sent it in and I was approved. I got my license. Well, when you get audited or examined, or even when you go through your warehouse renewals and a lot of investor renewals, they're going to go a little bit deeper. They're going to ask for your AML training. Yes, you have a fair lending policy, but let's see your fair lending training. If you do have a policy that talks about all this training you're doing for your staff, we want to see your training logs. So back to your question about what we produce, we do have an on-course learning platform that's available to our clients, and we assign them basic core courses. So everyone's going to get the basic fair lending, anti-money laundering, but we're also aware of what's going on in the industry. The focus has just moved from anti-money laundering. Now we're post 9/11 and what we were doing with everything with OFAC and limited denial participation lists, it's all focused on cybersecurity. So we're watching the trend in audits and also in the state's requirements. It's going to be around customer information security. It's going to be around IT assessments. So the days of doing an AML independent review annually, reporting to the board and all that, yes, you're still required to do it, but the focus is really going to be on penetration testing, everything with secure firewalls. Do you allow your LOs to use Gmail accounts? Are we using corporate accounts? So that's what we'll advise them on. We'll recommend they expand their core courses. And let's dig a little deeper. Let's look ahead at the states you're in. Like if New York, New Jersey, and California really have a focus on cybersecurity, let's go ahead and prepare for that. And that helps with licensing too. If you're kind of going to get licensed, we can help you navigate and maybe have a plan like, hey, let's start with Colorado. Let's start with Florida. Let's start with Texas. They have real quick turn times. You'll get your license. I don't want to say under a month, but it's really fast. That gets you a license you can hang today and start business today. And then let's wait for the ones that take longer. Let's go ahead and submit, and then we'll do the due diligence and the waiting on the states that have a longer process. So it's more or less a business administrative mindset on running a business at the same time being, like you said, the spear of the business, which is the personality, the driving force, the entrepreneurial spirit, the go get 'em, at the same time protecting what you've built.
Gotcha. So I guess, you know, for the guys that we're kind of talking about, right, and this podcast is attracting, is doing all of that and putting it in place, is that something that they can offload? Is that what I'm understanding, as long as they're willing to work with, or is it something more than that?
I think it's important that when you naturally progress from a retail shop where someone handled all this for you, then you branch off, you have a broker business, and maybe you touch compliance once in a while when MCRs are due and renewals are due, and maybe you have an audit, to being proactive with your approach to compliance, which is what a non-Dell correspondent should do. But how do you leverage someone in your company? You can't go hire a full-fledged chief compliance officer yet, or even a designated AML or privacy officer yet, right? So you have to go ahead and maybe find someone that's got that strong administrative skill set, maybe a senior member of your processing team, that person that's been with you from the beginning, trustworthy, and give them dual roles. And then line them up with someone like SCP or a consultant where they can maybe be mentored. They have access to the portal, the policy and the procedure. They go through that training orientation one time. They hear about core courses. They hear about anything that's duty specific, and they go, okay, I know how to manage that. They get their training logs then on a monthly basis. They review them. So I think you can leverage an in-house person, augment it with a firm that's outside, and you'd almost have the perfect combination of a compliance solution for a while, right? Until you grow your business. And then it's even just great to have maybe the ability to have current policies and procedures, you know, a firm that's got their ear to the ground from a regulatory standpoint with attorney driven policy. So, you know, they're at least current and kept up to date.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. I think that's what a lot of our listeners are looking for is that, okay, cool. I know that I don't know everything. I'm smart enough in that capacity, but where can I go to get help aside from having to go out there and hire that expert when I'm a new business, right? I don't have, you know, the ability to go out and fork out a full-time salary before I even have loans coming in the door. So that's really helpful. And I appreciate, you know, kind of having that color that they don't have to go at it alone. There's experts that are out there that can help them.
Right. And when when it's not feasible, right? When it's not feasible to have someone in house like that, we always say, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And that's something that goes very far within this industry. Sure. And not being afraid to ask for help and having that resource as well, alongside of that designated person that you may assign to within your company.
Right. So we've talked about so far, we've talked about that entry-level guy, right? Either, you know, existing broker transitioning or retail that's coming over, or maybe a loan officer is going to split off. Hey, I'm finally going to do it on my own. How they can get through that kind of second level. What do I need? Okay, now I've got everything here. Now kind of what's next? The final piece is the stuff that I run into from a warehouse lending perspective, right? There's only so much I can manage in my book of business, but I get lenders and it's, you know, they've already been running along for those 2 or 3 years. And it's like, hey, Nate, where do I get a copy of all the closed packages I've done with you? You know, where can I find, you know, records of disbursements and where can I find this? And right, all of those questions are gearing up for, they're going through an audit, right? So what would you say, because we also have, you know, our listeners that are existing correspondents, right? And maybe they didn't start, you know, kind of that first phase, that second phase working with somebody. Are they totally out of luck? Are they screwed at this point? Or what would you give them? What kind of advice, what kind of experience do you guys have with people that are arriving at that point? They've already, you know, they kind of got their foot in their mouth. What should they do? And yeah. I don't know, Lauren, Scott, would.
Yeah, so I'll kind of start, Scott, and then you can, whatever I miss. But I will say, as Scott said, you know, non-Dell audits are a bit more intense, right? They're a bit more robust on purpose. At the same time, it is possible to do that, right? It is possible to go through an audit, because if you're an organized person and you have your ducks in a row, you're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I will also say, within your first audit, auditors are not out to get you. They're not out to shut you down. It's that second audit that if you didn't fix the first problems that were addressed within that first audit, that's when you're kind of getting into deep water. You know, obviously it's possible. It would be easier if you were compliant from the beginning, right? If you have something from the beginning. But I mean, we have people calling us going through an audit currently all the time, needing assistance, needing advice, or people who just opened their shop and don't want to deal with that when the day comes, when the due date comes. Right. So really, it's a stressful situation no matter what, but having something in place and being proactive. It's proactive, it's responsibility, and it's being just prepared for an audit.
Right. And so, Scott, the guys that come to you and they're like, Scott, I'm not prepared at all. What do I do?
I think a lot of the stress is their background is that it may be their first Oklahoma audit or their first New Jersey audit.
Right.
Right. So what happens is to us, we represent clients in all 50 states. So at any one time, we've seen this state maybe 100 times, and we know the audit process and even the examiners. And not as a plug, but just as a, that we know what the culture and the scope of the exam is. Are they friendly? Are they adversarial? Are they triggered by maybe an initial exam, your first one, and then a full scope and follow-up exam? What was your rating on your first exam versus also your provided management responses, your corrective action plan, what you assured the state that you would correct next time around? They're back 24 months later. Well, you better have fixed those. So we do educate our clients to do their own document retention. The days of where, as a broker, the lender does that for me is one of the most common answers given at an exam. Right. Well, right now you are the lender. That's your name on the documents. That's your name on the warehouse line. That's your name on the disclosures, the websites, the front door, the licensing, and even on the contracts with your investors. All those indemnifications and clauses in there, that's your name. You're the lender now. And the state is auditing you from a different perspective. They want to see that you've grown up into this role and that you're responsible. But we want to use this exam process as a feedback loop. It's nothing to be afraid of. You can learn and grow from it. You should sweat through it if you weren't prepared. But by all means, you're going to pick yourself up at the end of it and say, well, I'm not going to let that happen again. And that's one of the greatest things I see when I'm working with a broker or a lender going through an audit is assuring them it'll be okay at the end, and we're going to have an opportunity to respond in writing, and we're going to give assurances of what we're going to fix going forward. And we didn't have to be in this place, but the examiner is going to really mention this as a, not necessarily a violation, but what's called a finding of report. Mm-hmm. And in our response, we're going to craft something that we believe in. And with that, we're going to be able to live up to it when they come back. So we're going to take our rating on the chin, unsatisfactory, needs improvement, satisfactory. There's not too many perfect papers given out there, but right. We're going to go ahead and learn and grow from it. So it's like a customer complaint or a loan file that you're having trouble getting bought off the credit line, right? Or all these conditions. Learn and grow from that. Use it as a feedback loop and say, hey, we got to shore up some things on our post-closing department. Or, hey, we got to do something better with customer service and give an outlet for these customers so they can vent their frustration or talk to an upper line person sooner. In the exam process, hey guys, that was a nightmare getting all those documents pulled together. They were all up on the investors and lender sites. We couldn't pull them down. Let's not do that again. Why don't we reconcile every quarter as we go? Right. We're turning in how many loans we closed on our MCR report. If we know we closed 15 in Texas, by all means, let's go ahead and reconcile and balance 15 closed loans in our document retention folders for Texas. That'll pay off big time when it comes around to audit season.
Gotcha. Lauren, back to you. So what's your favorite part of what you do? Generally, I think a lot of people, right, they look at compliance, they look at licensure stuff, and like, gosh, this is the stuff I don't want to deal with. I'm bored with it, et cetera. and I know you're not a boring person, neither are you, Scott. So can you just share with us what your favorite part of your job is?
Yeah, so I would say I get to see that LO, right? I get to see that LO that's working in retail call me and say, you know, I need to get out. I want to get out. I have this drive in me. And then I get to see that fully through until they're their own broker owner or even non-Dell, right? So it is very cool to see the personalities of the broker world. As you know, we're crazy people. Brokers are their own person, and being able to see someone kind of jump, you know, I get calls saying, I just got approved, you know, I just got approved, now what? And you know, I'm so excited. And I always say, congratulations, like that's a huge step. You just opened your own company. That's essentially what's happening every day. And it's very rewarding to see that. And when that pays off, and then they're connected to Scott or someone and have one conversation with one of our consultants, and they'll call me back and say, oh my, like, you guys are great, you know, and, or, you know, I could have never done this or didn't know. And that's, again, it goes back to, you don't know what you don't know until you ask. And I always tell them, you know, ask Scott, what should I be asking you? What should I be doing? And it really does pay off for them. And it's just really cool to see that whole process come together.
Well, and it's so nice to know that there is somebody there, right? Is that
right?
Is
an actual person too. Right. Yeah, it's not just
somebody that I can talk to, right? I'm not like the Nondell Influencers page that we have. I think it's fantastic. It gives a lot of people a lot of ideas and context of kind of what you need to do, how you can do it. But right, we only have so many hours out of each day and so many days out of each year. If we can help rely on other people in the industry to put our best foot forward, to shrink that timeline, get to what we want to be doing, it's really nice to find, right? Like people like yourself, that's what you want to do. Like that's your most exciting part of your job. So it's just nice that you got people that are inspired that want to do that.
Right. Yeah. And I would say for that too, I mean, don't be afraid to ask that friend that you know is successful and did it in one state, even if it's not your same state, you know, reach out to them. And they were at that starting point too at one point. And if you want to be up there at their level or better, you know, see what they did, pick their brain. And I think in the broker world, we're really good at that. And brokers are good at sharing their experiences and helping other brokers out.
Yeah. So Scott, for strategic compliance partners, can you let us know what really allows you guys to stand out in terms of being able to provide these kinds of solutions?
Well, I think it goes back to when you're asking even what we love about what we do, and it's making compliance relatable. It makes it real. One thing that I noticed coming from a corporate background, whether it be a bank or large national lenders and a chief compliance officer, is I was usually in a boardroom a lot, right? I was in an office that if you were a loan originator, you had little access to the compliance officer's mindset, right? You couldn't talk out scenarios in a realistic business or an entrepreneurial way. So what I do is I love the idea of not always putting up a roadblock for our clients. You would think with compliance, anytime you have an idea or a creative venue, something you want to try, you're going to probably get a no if you ask compliance. Right. I love just the workaround, not telling you what you can't do, but I know what you want to accomplish. I know where you're coming from. Let's figure out how to do it, but do it safely. So I'd rather set up guardrails instead of putting up stop signs all the time. I think these guardrails allow everyone to navigate out of the retail shop to a broker shop and safely to a Nondell correspondent. And It still allows you still to express yourself in the marketplace. Every broker and Nondell correspondent, they're not cookie cutters of a big national lender. They kind of have their own branding, right? That's what you see on social media. That's what you see on podcasts like this. When you go to these shows, don't become siloed and put yourself in some type of niche. Get out there to the trade shows and meet everybody. Go to the mixers, go to the events, get to meet everybody and look at how different and unique and diverse everybody is. But we all have one thing in common, and that's our need to remain compliant, hit our renewals, pass our exams, and be in business next year to do it all again. So that's what I love about it, is setting up the parameters. So beyond just policies that most people associate strategic with, it's the consulting services that I'm most passionate about. I think policies have traditionally been available where you just buy them or you find them on the internet.
Right.
But I know, right? And we've all seen those turned in when you're trying to get improved at your warehouse line or your investor. They're kicked back and they got red lines all through them. They're obviously from 1990 or 2012, just copied over and over and over again.
Yep.
So the regulators and the investors at this level are going to sniff that out. And you're going to have true compliant policies that have revisioning and versioning on them, and they're signed off by management, and you've assigned and appointed officers. So I think that's a great ability, is to consult to the policies and then get them implemented correctly, and then understand where you're coming from as a small business owner. A compliance officer's role in a big national lender is a lot different when you're dealing with the CFPB and the Fed and the FDIC and all the regulatory oversight there, as opposed to now on the front line of, we know if you just got licensed in Texas, you're going to get an initial assessment exam in 9 months. And here's what it's going to ask for. And here's what we're going to assign these courses, because we're going to need to produce these training manuals. We're going to need to show red flags already in place. We're going to need to show a Texas complaint notice on the website. And by the way, if you just update it from a broker to a banker, right? You have to actually change out that notice. There's a different notice for the complaint notice on your website for a broker than for a banker. So we don't want those, I call it the low-hanging fruit. Let's not give the examiner the easy ones. We'll go ahead and get those taken off the table right away.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's a tremendous service. I appreciate you guys certainly being on the on our podcast today, being contributors to Non-Dell Influencers. For the folks that are listening, what's the best way for them to either get in touch with you or to kind of begin the next steps, kind of, you know, irregardless of where they are in the process or their, you know, kind of life as an independent originator?
Yeah, so that would be reaching out to me. So I know, Nate, you have my email. I don't know if we can put it in the caption or after.
Yeah, we'll certainly have it in the bio. Yep.
Yeah, and it's just lauren@strategiccompliancepartners. We have a long email, but it's just my first name at strategiccompliancepartners. You can email me there or call me too. So I'm kind of the direct line of contact to tell you where you're at, where you need to go. And then if you guys do sign up with us, we'll pass you along to someone as great as Scott or Scott and take it from there.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you guys being on there. For our listeners today, thank you for tuning in, hearing more about, hey, it's not so scary to be able to go out, make the transition on your own. If you're somewhere in the you know, kind of in the swim lane and you think that you're drowning, you've got an upcoming audit, don't completely freak out. There's resources available out there for you, such as Strategic Compliance Partners. Please be sure to subscribe to Non-Dell Influencers using the link in the bio below. Subscribe to the website, nondellinfluencers.com. We've got tons of content for you. And thanks for listening. We appreciate it.